Well, then you row the rabbit across, and the fox won't eat the cabbage. Then you go back for the fox, and when you drop him off, put the rabbit back in the boat and go get the cabbage. Only this time you leave the rabbit behind, and then you row the cabbage back across. Again, the fox will not eat the cabbage. And then you go back for the rabbit.
That's it.
See, that wasn't so hard.
This is the Extra Hawk Raid. Extra Great Podcast, I'm Not Stopping, episode 35 for the week of June 23rd, 2014. I am Ice Scraper of Destiny, David T. Cole, and I'm here with retired law enforcement grandpa, Sarah D. Bunting.
I'll get my shotgun.
Grilled cheese and ginger ale enthusiast, Tara Ariano.
I'll eat them all.
And Paul Bunyan impersonator, Jeff Alexander.
Aw, for neat.
Welcome to the podcast. Joining us this week is Jeff Alexander, back again. Hello, Jeff.
Hey.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Ooh. We're very happy to have you in general, but especially because we are talking about two lead topics that are very near and dear to your heart.
Jeff Alexander covers double shot.
So you have not been writing about Fargo for us, because I nabbed that job, but you have been writing about it for NPR, correct? Or reporting on it, I guess.
Right, for Minnesota Public Radio's blog.
All right, so let's start with that.
And we should mention that Jeff lives in Minnesota.
Correct.
Yeah, so I know of which I speak.
So, yes, yeah, start us off. How accurate has the show been, in your opinion?
Mostly pretty accurate.
Experience, yeah.
Yeah, you know, they get the vibe right. They get a lot of the sort of Minnesotan non-confrontationalism, the sort of passive aggression that sometimes occurs. And but I think what makes the show interesting is that the people from out of the area, you know, sort of rub against that and create conflict. And I think that keeps it interesting, keeps it from getting too samey.
Mm-hmm. Whose accent was the best or worst?
It's hard to say. I think Allison Tolman's was excellent. She's actually from Texas, but I think her accent was pretty seamless. Mm-hmm. Martin Freeman, too. I found him a little distracting at first, but by the end of the series, I found myself forgetting that that wasn't his real voice.
I had that experience, too, because yeah. He's so Watson-y at first. It's hard to separate him from the role that he's most known for, especially since this is so different. And I think I had a run of tweets at the beginning of the season of, like, imagining what Martin Freeman was doing for fun in Calgary, where they actually filmed the show.
I remember those tweets.
Yeah, no offense to Calgary, which is a fine city, I'm sure. I haven't been there in more than 20 years, but it seems like it would be a big culture shock for him, even more so than Mads Mikkelsen in Toronto for Hannibal.
Yeah, but they got the look of Bemidji right, I think. Mm-hmm. The Main Street part of it looked very homey, small-towny, Minnesotan-y, storefront-y, mm-hmm. Snowy and icy.
Yep.
So, no complaints there.
All Calgary right. Does have that in spades. Snowy and icy. Oh, snow yeah. Hellscapes.
Ugh.
I'm sure.
All right, so let's talk about the finale. How did it work for you?
I liked it. I thought it was almost perfect. I kind of shared your concern, Tara, about Molly not getting to have the big confrontation at the end, mm-hmm. having that robbed from her.
Yeah.
But other than that, I found it really satisfying. You know, I thought that the show did not do anything at random, mm-hmm. or by accident. It was all very deliberate and purposeful, even if I don't necessarily understand everything, every part of it. Mm-hmm. But I think it knew what it was doing.
Yeah, I as I wrote in my post about it on previously.tv, I did have a problem with the way the season ended. Not because, like, I feel like if they didn't want to give that victory to her for whatever reason, there are other ways that they could have had
it. What was the victory for the benefit of those who may be listening but okay. didn't watch the show?
So she's been pursuing this criminal through all 10 episodes of the show, Lorne Malvo, played by Billy Bob Thornton. She's pretty convinced that he has been in cahoots in some way with Martin Freeman's guy, Lester Nygaard. She doesn't have the particulars exactly right, but she's basically on the right track, and everything, of course, comes to a head in the season finale. And then what happens when she's just about to, like, go out with the whole rest of the police department on this manhunt for Lorne Malvo, her husband calls and says, please don't go. And she's like, okay. Which, to me, like, I feel like there are other ways they could have had her had that end with her not apprehending him that would have been more true to the show, because while I agree that the show is very deliberate, there have been a lot of points through the season where, you know, we sort of see how chance plays a part in how things happen too. And that
absolutely.
It could have been a chance thing rather than her being like, okay, I guess I'll forget that I'm a police officer today. Even though she eventually is like, well, fuck this, and goes out anyway. It happens too late. And then my other problem with it is that what actually happens is that her husband, who's totally not a cop at all anymore, and who's also had his own run-in with this guy in the season premiere.
Never really was a cop.
No, he was a pretty shitty cop.
When he was on the police force, yeah. He was very
ineffective. Shooting her by accident in the spleen. But then he ends up just, like, trapping Lorne Malvo in this cabin, and then he shoots him. And then at the end of it, he gets a commendation. Now, this is where I turn it over to Sarah, our true crime expert. How is that a commendation-worthy thing and not straight vigilantism where he was shooting an unarmed person? An unarmed wounded person.
Yeah, who already stepped in a bear trap, like, and yeah. It's Colin Hanks. I don't know. Can we get the Peggy sound drop, please? Thank you. That's bullshit. I mean, I will say, I watched the first couple episodes and then I kind of dropped out because, like, I didn't dislike the show or anything, but mm-hmm. there were just a lot of shows.
Yeah.
But when I came back in, I kind of, like, a lot of time has passed since where I left off.
Yeah.
So it was kind of fun, like, trying to put all the pieces together and see where everything was supposed to be going and fill it in for myself. It was like a little movie. I still liked all the performances, and it was a fun use of my time. I enjoyed it. But I thought that him, Gus, is that the character's name?
Yes.
Calling her and being like, please don't go out there, it's too dangerous. Like, and then that he's the one who shoots the guy. Like, I thought it was really an interesting way to address the tension between, like, you know, your law enforcement career and your family, and when is one going to come before the other one, and, you know, what other time is there going to be when she's, you know, so gigantically pregnant? Like, what more caution, like, how much more cautious a time would there be in her career, and, like, do you want to fight with him about doing it or not doing it? Like, I just thought that was interesting. Mm-hmm. But then that they're all just snuggling on the couch and that he is telling her that he's getting a commendation. Like, isn't she the police chief now?
Yeah. Well, she will be when Bill Odenkirk's guy retires. Bob Odenkirk.
Right.
Rather.
But even, I mean, even if, like,
but
they
yeah,
call
she would
him
know
at
that.
Home when she's not home, she would know that and she would have something to say about it. And it's like, what would probably have to happen is that the police force is going to, you know, find a way to make this look like it was self-defense.
Right.
While also trying to explain the, you know, rank incompetence of everybody involved in the slaying of half the fucking FBI of that segment of the country. Like,
yeah.
I don't. And then they're all just on the couch and nobody has any reaction that it's like, well, we're just going to keep watching TV. Like, I'm getting a commendation for telling you to stay home and not do your job.
Yeah.
And then doing the opposite myself.
Yeah, like,
right.
Nobody in this house, like, we should probably both be in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind, like, just hanging out on the couch, still cops, woo. Like, yeah, that was a little tough.
Yeah.
I have to wonder what they were, like, what the discussion was in the writer's room. Like, how are we going to wrap this up? Like, why does there have to be any dialogue about this at all? Let's let the viewer fill in whatever they think happened and let us just retcon it and then we'll move on.
Well, so. And it would not have been that hard for them to, for the scene to be, and then Lorne Malvo reaches for his gun and then Gus shoots him first. Like, I just don't understand why that was the ending, because it bugged me so much. Like, I agree with you, Sarah, that there probably would have, if this were real, which it isn't, that there would have been some kind of, like, sneakiness around the scene in order to, you know, get around the whole, vigilante aspect of it, but I don't understand why this was how it ended.
And the other thing about, like, having that question unanswered is like the series at that point was funneling to that scene. You know, like in the my favorite part of the series was sort of right in the middle where they're where before the characters and the settings contract. You know, there was so many more characters involved. It was this sort of like great mosaic of oddball characters.
With the Supermarket King and his
whole Supermarket King and the hitmen, the death hitmen and his partner. Mm-hmm. And there was just so many.
Right, Goldberg.
Yeah, there's so many things going on. And then in the last like four episodes, everything contracts down to, you know, these main four or five characters. And it sort of like lost sort of its magic for me at that point. Or it doesn't feel like, well, again, back to the point. When you have that few characters and you're boiling down the storylines, all the more reason to figure out your ending.
Yeah.
You know, or less excuse not to figure out your ending anyways. And
or leave it ambiguous, which feels very sort of arty and also gets you off the hook for you can just have that David Chase response where it's like, well, he's whatever, you know, whatever happened is whatever you think happened. It's like, okay, that's one way of doing it without, I don't have a problem with Gus sort of just like shooting him in cold blood because I felt like for Lorne Malvo, like, of course that's how it ends.
Yeah.
Kind of with a whimper that he gets shot by that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But then to put a button on it with like, you know, the town is going to reward you for this Clint Eastwoodian behavior. Like I didn't really buy it. And
it didn't.
Are you guys going to keep watching next year?
Are they doing another one?
I don't think it's been announced, but yeah, I would watch another season.
I would too.
I would rather that this guy write something that didn't take place in this universe. Like, I feel like even though they use the Fargo sort of vibe and everything, like, it's still, looking back, I still think like it was kind of a cheap connection. Like, the whole, you know, Red Scraper destiny, and that's why it's Fargo. And they're just basically borrowing, you know, the setting and sort of, you know, some of the character traits. I feel like I would rather see original content from these people than another episode of Fargo. I feel like it was interesting endeavor, like to take this really
noble
great
experiment.
Yes, noble experiment. I don't think it was entirely successful. I don't think a second season is needed. And like I enjoyed the series fine. I feel like it kind of like I enjoyed the first half of the series a lot after the first episode, which I thought was really slavish to the movie in a really disconcerting way. And after that, it sort of settled into its own particular rhythm. But second season, nah, don't need it.
I'm glad.
I think it'd be interesting. Sorry, go ahead.
You go ahead.
I think it'd be interesting if there were a second season to explore what happened to Lou in 1979 in Sioux Falls. Just because there are a lot of hints about that, but we never really found out what happened. But I think there's probably some kind of story there.
I'm glad you brought him up because he's my favorite.
Lou, yeah.
He's pretty awesome.
And it dovetails with my thing that I wrote about Fringe on Friday, which is I'm kind of bored of men on TV, but old men are the exception to the rule. The man thing, just to get back to Gus for one more second, the other reason that it bugged me, and I didn't really get into this a huge amount in my post, but a lot of other critics have written about it, is that what a lot of people liked about Fargo is that it sort of upended the you know, anti-hero tropes of recent series like Breaking Bad or whatever else by making it completely impossible to root for Lester over the course of the season, even if it started a little bit more ambiguously, because I certainly saw that on the forums where it was like, yeah, Lester was right to kill his wife with a hammer, like, okay. Uh-huh. I mean, not in those words, but you know, like, people, whatever. I'm paraphrasing.
Well, that was another
slightly
issue that I've had with the show from the jump, was like, well, if, you know, if he wasn't going to kill her, I was going to do it. It's fucking terrible.
But
there's absolutely no universe in which you would buy that these people married each other and stayed that way for more than 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Continue. I was just going to say, over the course of the season, he gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse, and like can no longer claim that he's just a victim of circumstance or whatever. Like, he's making affirmative decisions and whatever. But then it ends up being, you know, to me, a kind of betrayal of Molly's whole storyline by having the ultimate payoff be Gus's getting his own balls back by fixing the mistake that he made in the series premiere of not apprehending Lorne when he had the chance, which is
I think our friend Linda Holmes had a good, interesting take on that in her blog for NPR, Monkey See. She talked about how the ending was actually kind of Lorne corrupting Gus, you know, turning Gus into a killer. You know, that's kind of Lauren's thing, is turning people into himself. And I thought that was an interesting interpretation.
Yeah, I buy
that. Well, that tied into what I was saying before from the pilot, that I thought that was one of the most interesting things, that they didn't linger on it too long. But Lorne is like, I'm offering you the chance to live.
Yeah.
And he does the arithmetic, and he's like, I have a kid. And then it comes up again in the finale where he's like, you know, I don't want my daughter to have to go to any more funerals, which, yeah, fair enough. I liked the way that was always in the background. Like, what is going to get more weight in this situation? I don't think Gus necessarily chose correctly, mm-hmm, but yeah, I mean, I do kind of think it might ruin the good stuff that they did in this noble experiment if they under the dome it into a second season or series, but I don't know.
But I do think I never even thought of the Lou thing. That's great. I mean, I think there are a lot of other story stubs where they could go. I mean, I don't necessarily think like making the money a monkey's paw is the way to go. Or like, right, every season is about a different person finding it and then getting their lives fucked up by it. Although,
please no.
There's that one series where the guy finds it, just buys a really bitchin' like souped up Trans Am. It's just him going on his trip.
Or D.B. Cooper comes back for it.
Here we go again.
All right. Well, so the end of Fargo, first, maybe only season. Definitely interesting. Lots to think about. Worth the effort, I would say.
Yep.
Even if the payoff did not jibe with what I would have wanted it to be. Moving on. Oh.
Send in the clone!
Send in the clone, indeed. Now we're moving on to another show that Jeff has written about a lot for us on previously.tv, which is Orphan Black, which had its finale this weekend. What did we think?
Well, I really liked the second season a lot. I was, you know, it had such a strong first season that I think was driven by Discovery. You know, like every few episodes, there would be a reveal like, oh, there's another sister, and, you know, a little bit of tease of what's going on behind the scenes institutionally. And then the second season was less of that and more about moving the, the Dyad Institute arm of the story forward. And I was interested to see if that was going to work because, you know, I felt like the first season was kind of felt like the early seasons of Lost in the way that you were introduced to all these new elements, so sort of this rapid fire manner. It was very addicting in that way. And the second season sort of slowed that down and brought forth, all the conspiracy stuff and all the science stuff. And it worked for me. I think the only new person we really got out of it was Tony. And I suppose at the end, Caster. But yeah, I really enjoyed the second season a lot. What did you think, Jeff?
Oh, there's the Prolethians too.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, at the end of the leader, which was spectacular. Really.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. That was, yeah, no, I like the second season a lot as well. I basically mainlined the first season a few weeks before the second season premiere, so it's kind of a different experience for me. But yeah, I agree with Dave that this is very differently paced, although how much of that is a function of the speed at which I watched it, I can't say for sure. But it's interesting to watch an episode and not know that there's another episode right after that to find out what happens next. But it's a lot less linear, I felt like, than the first season was. It took a lot of different directions in the second season. You know, Sarah was chasing around after a lot of different stuff, and who knew what Allison or Helena were up to at any given moment. But it was interesting. I liked it.
I sort of came into the series. I mean, it was exactly the same as you, Jeff. I like mainlined the first season in 2 days, I think.
Yeah.
And then watched the second season like, you know, regular civilian weekly. So I don't know if that made me feel like the second season was better. Like I wasn't seeing it as a unit so much as I did the first season, but I sort of wasn't really understanding why it was confusing to people or why that was a problem. Because I think one of the great things about this show is that you can watch it from a like plot driven, like sort of clone dystopia standpoint, or you can watch it from a character driven way, which is kind of how I watch it. So like the fact that they're flipping back and forth with their loyalties like they're on Revenge didn't bother me, I guess, because I like Revenge.
Yeah, if I was watching this for plot, I'd be very frustrated.
Yeah, I didn't always feel like I understood who was motivated by what from episode to episode, but I weirdly didn't really care.
Exactly.
So yeah, it so carries you along. I mean, I think like you, Sarah, I was more character into it for the characters. So, you know, the shifting loyalties about like, well, I'll trust you for 24 hours or whatever. Like that the ultimate overarching story was less clear to me, but I didn't really care. I still thought it was a really good season.
Can we talk about the dance scene though? In the finale?
It really went on for a long time.
It went on for a really long time. I think it was only there to show off the technology, and mm-hmm. it was the only time I had ever noticed it not working.
That yeah,
I was
you like, could wow, really see the green screen. Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
The first time I've seen themes on that show.
Yeah.
Yep.
Between clones.
Same with me.
Mm-hmm.
But I would also like to say, on the positive side, the actress who plays Kira is really good.
She is. Skylar Wexler.
Yeah,
that's her name.
Usually I'm sort of like, okay, for like kid actors, you're grading on a pretty steep curve. And then she's being asked to do some next level stuff in terms of probably having some kind of second sight. And I don't know. She's
great. I disagree.
She's not my favorite either. Yeah. but that's there's plenty to discuss.
But we know how much Sarah Bunting loves children.
That's true.
You really
it's
are.
It's important to make them feel loved and supported in their work as actors.
I need to apologize for any pops in the last 3 minutes. One of my mic stands broke on air, so I had to try to change to a different one, and it was not entirely successful.
Anyway, so now there's a new set of clones. I was really sad that it was not, Sarah, your prediction that it was going to be an army of Felices.
Oh,
I'm not. I'm
glad
sad.
It wasn't that.
Yeah,
but
me too. Yeah.
I wouldn't have minded 100 Pauls.
I was a little scared. I was a little scared it was going to be a bunch of Pauls. Mm.
Well,
pile of Pauls.
Felix is such a unique character. You know, I wouldn't want to see him diluted.
Who? Felix?
Yeah.
Paul is not a unique character.
No, Paul is
no.
He is
generic
a dime
man.
A dozen.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to hear Jordan Gavaris's real accent though once in a while.
Yeah, you do sometimes hear it in the interstitial little promos for their live tweeting or whatever.
Right.
So that's the last guy I would have expected it to be, though. Like, him?
Yeah, I know. And it's like, who's this dude? Can he pull this off?
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially without the crutch of all the hair acting that Tatiana Maslany has to do.
Yeah, I mean, he does have a stupid haircut as the first guy we met, so there's that. I'm sure
yeah.
he'll find lots of other stupid things to do with his head, too.
Let's hope.
How about those crazy eyes?
Yeah.
Breathing against the his little prison cage there at the end. Like, that was...
It's like, ew, it's evil Tobey Maguire.
Oh. Yeah, now I'm not excited for season 3 at all.
Yeah, so I don't know if he's gonna manage it, but it'll be... I don't know. It's always interesting, so I'm sure it will be.
What do you think of Michelle Forbes?
I always like her.
Yeah, me too. And I'm hoping that, you know, obviously I think season 3 she's going to have more of a role, sort of the next Rachel up.
Right.
Well, and I'm hoping that there's some sort of Matrix fight scene between her and Mrs. S because...
Mm, yeah, for
buy
sure.
Tickets for that.
So Rachel's
both
not
highly
dead.
Badass.
Would we agree that Rachel is not dead?
I think that is correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, she's had a number 2.
In the eye, though, like, I just assumed that she was dead, and then the whole internet is like, oh, well, she'll be back with an eye patch, and I was like, oh.
That's what I assumed.
I'm just not,
yeah.
I'm just not into her at all, so. And that wig.
Yeah, nope. And the whole, like, you know, you stole my babies aspect of her supervillainy is not that interesting to me, but, you know.
That's because you have never experienced the miracle of childbirth, Tara.
Is that why?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah,
I get on that.
So, all right. So what's everybody hoping to see out of season 3?
Allison by the barrelful. I don't want one more episode to go by with no Allison. An episode with no Allison is an episode with no sunshine.
What did you think, Tara, of the rise of Donnie? Or the resurgence of Donnie?
Whatever. He's not really worthy of Allison, but then who is?
But his little scene where he goes apeshit on the cops in the van was pretty great.
That's true. That was good.
Yeah, that was a good scene. Donnie 2.0.
The selfie. The angry.
I would like to see all the non-clones band together, like in a Scooby van. Yeah. Cal, mm-hmm. Art.
Yeah. Angela, DeAngelis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, poor Angela.
What do you want
to... Vic the Dick.
Jeff, what are you thinking of season 3?
I'm reluctant to make any predictions because every time I try and predict something on that show, it ends up wrong.
What's going to happen with the pickup baby? Like, is that going to have any connection to anything that's going on, or was that just a vector for Caster to be in the show?
Oh, the extra, the other clone?
Gracie. No, Gracie's baby.
Oh, her.
Yeah.
Oh.
Hmm.
Like, what's going to come of all that? I mean, let's not get that. Let's not have the religious leader who died of a prod up his taint. Die in vain.
I don't think it was his taint.
It could have been all around.
That's
there.
True. It could have been everywhere.
She shoved that
by
thing
the
pretty
time
hard.
She was done. It was his, you know, yeah. Soft palate. But anyway, sorry.
That's a Johansson kebab.
Oh, gross. Too farther.
Oh, is that too far? All right, there's the line. Okay.
There's no line. Oh.
Yeah, well, technically, I guess the baby biologically is the offspring of Johansson and Helena, so
right.
Who the hell knows?
Yeah.
Who the hell knows indeed?
Well, yeah. But, I mean, and who knows? Who knows? Like, we didn't see, that's what he said, but who knows? I mean, he thinks she's an abomination, so he might have used different eggs entirely.
Mm.
It might be a Mark baby.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so... the actress going to get her Emmy this year?
Well, she just got a Critics' Choice Award, but she got that last year and it didn't really help. So, yeah.
So
no.
Know. Tough luck.
I don't feel like it has the, it's no, still known
doesn't
enough
have the reach.
In the world. Yeah. It's, I think it's still too niche-y to be on Emmy's radar, but you know, they did give an award to Merritt Weaver last year. So good things do happen there occasionally.
The only, yeah,
it depends on who else is nominated, I would say, but probably not. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, seems unlikely.
All right, it's time to go around the dial, and our first stop is Sarah.
Hi, there's absolutely no danger of the following show being nominated for an Emmy or anything else. It's a little program called The Haunting of... in which celebrities hoping to promote upcoming projects or just get back on the radar and maybe get a new agent pretend to medium Kim Russo that they are being haunted or have been haunted in the past or maybe would like to be haunted by someone who they miss. But the show's actually, I mean, the show is terrible, and yet it's pretty good for process nerds, allow me to explain.
Mm-hmm.
If you are watching it in the hopes that you will be either frightened or convinced that any actual paranormal activity has happened to anyone on screen, wrong show. But if you're looking to, if you're sort of fascinated by how mediums, like, or whatever, alleged mediums, tarot card readers, people who make their living pretending they have second sight actually do it, it's pretty cool. Like, Kim Russo, maybe she does have second sight. I don't know. Like Mulder, I want to believe. Like Scully, I can't.
Mm-hmm.
But she, I mean, it's interesting looking at how she makes the process convincing. That she starts with these cold read things like, I'm seeing a man. He's around 6 feet tall. I'm getting the letter M. Like, that kind of thing that you're like, oh, mm-hmm. my God. But then she... you know, you can really look for it and see the seams, like, all right, that's the kind of detail that she could have looked it up. Like, she could have gotten it from some online source, ancestry.com, Department of Buildings.
Yeah.
But she's very, like, she's very convincing. She plays the role very well, and she's very professional, which I sort of admire. So if you're into the process of, like, not people being duped, but, like, how the... whatever, celebrity paranormal industrial complex that apparently exists now exclusively on Ellen works. For me, it's kind of neat. And I believe this is the it's hard to tell if it's the second or third season. I think they had like seasons 1A and B or something like that. Anyway, or yeah, sorry, seasons 2A and B. Vince Neil will be coming up this season along with a number of other D-list celebrities. And I don't know. It's pretty fun. It's a good thing to watch at the Peanut Gallery if you're all in on a rainy night. So I recommend.
Jeff, what do you got for us?
A couple things. I am working on a marathon diary for Previously.tv on Doctor Who. I started trying to catch up on the whole series, all 50 years of it, late last year, which was way too late to start on that, as it turns out. So I have skipped several Doctors, and I'm just starting with the Matt Smith series. Several episodes into that, working on my second installment of the marathon diary, which should be up on the site tomorrow, so look for that. Second thing I'm working on is Big Brother is coming back this week, I believe, Thursday. And we remember last year there was a lot of controversy about some bigoted statements being said on the air and on the live feeds and that whole controversy. CBS has learned nothing from that. And apparently already one of the cast members, who most viewers have yet to meet, has already been spotted online making some racist, homophobic, Islamophobic remarks and posts and so forth. I'm not going to repeat them, but Andy Dennard at Reality Blurred has the whole story if you want to check that out and feel bad about yourself. so there's that, which I will be planning to do all summer. This will be my 8th season covering Big Brother, so can't wait.
Jeff, why did you do this to yourself?
You know, I think I'm atoning for something in a past life.
Two topics. One is Enlisted, which we've talked about a lot on this podcast, has just aired as we record this. It's final episode last night. It was so good. It was like John Ramos in his post about it on Previously.tv said it was its final and best episode. And I would agree. It's called Alive Day. It really nicely sort of braids all the skeins of the show, you know, the heart and the real military stuff and the funny in a way that's very touching and sweet. And I didn't cry, but I almost did. Also featured a nice, a very nice showcase for Keith David's Cody, who is probably my favorite character and has something bad happen to his prosthetic foot. That's all I'll say. But we also, moving on from the good to another show that Dave and I watched, Tyrant!
Oh, yeah.
we watched the series premiere of Tyrant, which is premiering as we record this tomorrow night.
No one will take my sand.
So we've...
that's all the commercials.
We've heard from someone who knows...
I like sand.
...about the world of promotions that apparently FX kind of hamstrung how they were going to promote the show by like wanting to really gloss over all the parts about it which are take place in the Middle East, which
isn't
all of
whole
it
part of the world kind of iffy.
Exactly. So necessarily know from the commercials what it's about, but it's about this guy whose father is the dictator of Fakistan. And his nephew...
Well, it's not Death Valley, then.
No. No. So he's escaped or left the country and is now a pediatrician in Los Angeles. But his nephew is about to get married, so he and his wife and their two dumb teenage kids that are required on every one of these kind of shows are going back for the wedding. And then crazy stuff happens. Oh, my God, you guys. You're not going to believe it, but he doesn't get out clean. And I was... It's remarkable how much this is the same show as Ray Donovan, except it takes place in the Middle East. Like, it's all about the taciturn guy who won't open up to his nagging blonde wife, who somehow, up until the events of the show starts, has been totally fine with him never talking to her at all.
Through 19 years of marriage.
For 19 years of marriage, they say more than once, and then all of a sudden she's like, wait a minute, you've never told me anything about your past. Like, where have you, what have you been talking about this whole time?
Damn it, Chloe, who are you working for?
Yeah. So, anyway, I guess I will probably continue to watch as long as they send me screeners, but it's super duper boring. None of the characters is really compelling. Dave, would you agree?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It really is Ray Donovan-esque.
I know.
Now that you're painting that picture, I'm like, oh, yeah. And Ray Donovan isn't a great show.
And in both cases, the spoiler alert, but not really. It's like the reason that he's not opening up to you is because he kills people all the time and he can't tell you that and still be married to you. Maybe don't marry a murderer. That's my advice to blonde ladies on TV.
Yeah, that's good advice. It is interesting. Like, I'm kind of surprised that it got picked up, you know, only because that nobody knows what to do with it. Nobody knows how to sell it.
Yeah.
Like, it might be.
Well, and it is kind of this, like, you know, that meme from like 10 years ago where it was like Shining and it was the footage from The Shining, but with Salisbury Hill playing over it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's kind of been the promotion. And it's like, well, is this just a family drama where everyone's mad that he moved to the States? Because I don't care.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fictionalized version of a real Middle Eastern kind of, you know, dictator family. So it could be interesting in that regard. But I mean, it's. It doesn't really grab you by the balls. Like, it's really, like, the pilot should have been either much more kinetic, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not. Like, the whole thing kind of takes place over a wedding weekend, and it's sort of just kind of really, like, lazy. I mean, like, it feels like a lazy weekend. I don't mean, like, you know, it's a lazily produced show. Mm-hmm. A lot of cast members from the Prisoner of War series.
Oh, yeah, the original one.
It was nice to see them getting some work. But, yeah, I would say, like, let's give it one or two more, see if it, you know, what it does after it takes an hour to set its premise.
Yeah.
But
basically, if you were waiting for a fictionalized version of the Bashar al-Assad story, mm-hmm. this is for you. Everyone right. else, I don't know.
Yeah, agreed. Let's talk Dominion.
Yeah.
The sequel series to the shitfest awesome movie that was Legion. Premiered
Wait,
last...
what?
What?
Is it really?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
did
yes.
you watch it?
I did not.
All right. So, yes, it is. It takes place... So, in the movie Legion... Oh, here we go. Wait, hang on. Dominion Legion, spoilers, ahoy, fun ahoy, fuck that up. Okay, so in the movie, at the end of the movie, basically Jesus Christ 2 is born. And the war between angels and men has started, and they send him out, right? So that's it. He's a kid, and the mother and father hop in a pickup truck, and they escape, and they're going on their little... adventure. And then fast forward to Dominion the series. Now humanity's in these little sort of city states, walled city states, which, by the way, if you're dealing with angels, maybe your money's better spent
on a roof,
on a roof,
on a dome,
and yeah. a wall, yes.
Ceiling, a bug zapper.
And now like a really, really big bug zapper,
right?
Yeah. So now JC2 is like, you know, 20-ish or so, I think. 25?
Yeah, I mean,
it's hard to tell.
It's supposed to be 20 years later, I guess.
Beaver
I don't know
hair.
If it is. I don't know. Anyways. So now Las Vegas is Vega, and they spend a lot of what I'm going to guess is a limited amount of energy available to them. I mean, Hoover Dam's close, but they're still lighting up all the neon on the strip.
For no reason.
No, for no reason. And
those are the bug zappers, guys.
Well, they spent, I'm going to guess, the first year or two removing all the copyrighted names from all the hotels.
Yeah.
The MGM Grand just has a picture of a stylized lion on it now and stuff like that.
Wow.
The Paris Hotel is just like a balloon now. but basically, this series, judging by the pilot, is like such a Battlestar Galactica wannabe. Like, there's so many parallels with the reboot of Battlestar Galactica. It's a little embarrassing.
Plus Angels is in the middle of the Venn diagram of both of those shows.
Well, I mean, but Angels serve as the Cylons. So
right.
in this series, there's higher angels and lower angels. And the lower angels don't have bodies of their own. So they possess humans, and they're basically cannon fodder. And they're basically the robot Cylons. And then the higher angels, of which there is one good guy and all the rest are sort of like want to wipe out humanity. The higher angels are like the human Cylons. They can take human form. They can look like any other human, just like a Cylon, just like Six or the Dean Stockwell Cylon and those kind of guys. You know, they can get into the ranks. There is, of course, a religious undercurrent over the in the whole show. Humanity's almost extinct. There are survivor cities that have their own cultures and sort of have this sort of uneasy alliance with other cities, like the 12 colonies of Battlestar Galactica. It's basically Battlestar Angelica. Mm-hmm. except not as good and doesn't have...
Not good at all,
no.
I would say.
Oh,
no.
You had me and then you lost me.
Yeah, yeah. instead of watching this, I'll report back if it gets better. I'm going to give it a couple more episodes. But instead of watching this, I would say go back and start with season one of Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, I thought you were going to say watch Legion.
Well, of course watch Legion. I assume everybody's doing that.
It's not like you're going to not watch Legion.
Yeah. Just watch Legion and Priest. That's really all you need to do.
I don't know why you always pump up Priest.
Because it's the same guy.
Yeah, but it's not a very good movie. It's not a shit
show. Oh, I'm sorry.
Show.
I didn't realize Legion was a very good movie.
It is. All right, it is time for the canon, and Jeff is going to pitch us what?
Episode one, season three of The Walking Dead, episode called Seed.
Excellent.
So here goes. If I were capable of giving up on a zombie show, I would have given up on The Walking Dead during the second season when the group spent almost all 13 episodes hanging around arguing on Herschel Green's farm. They all debated deep, weighty matters like finding the balance between survival and humanity and whether survival was even a viable goal. So we were stuck with a talky, character-driven AMC drama with zombies thrown in, and not that many of them. So Rick's biggest problems were complicated group dynamics, trying to secure his group's residence at the farm, which wasn't even that secure to begin with. All it would have taken was a single zombie herd to pass through, and everyone there would be screwed. And fortunately, at the end of the season, that's exactly what happened. So at the end of that season, the show creator, the showrunner, Frank Darabont, was replaced by a new executive producer, Glenn Mazzara, which gave season three the potential to go in a whole new direction, which I think it did. The first episode of season three, Seed, wastes no time changing everything. It has a five-minute cold open with no dialogue whatsoever, which is completely the opposite of the first two seasons. Characters have changed too. It's been a winter on the road, so the gang of idiots who fled the farm are more like a elite survival corps almost. They officially clear this not quite abandoned house without having to exchange a word. So after that's established, we find out that Rick is desperate to find somewhere safe where Lori can give birth, his wife. That's going to happen soon. So he and Daryl come across the prison where the cast is going to end up spending the next season and a half. So when Daryl sees all the zombies in the yard, says that's a shame, Rick just sees the potential.
That's perfect. If we can shut that gate, prevent more from filling the yard, we can pick up these walkers. We'll take the field by the night.
So how do we shut the gate?
I'll do it. You guys cover me.
No. Suicide run.
I'm the fastest.
No, you, Maggie, and Beth draw as many as you can over there. Pop them through the fence. Daryl, go back to the other tower. Carol,
you become a pretty good shot. Take your time. We don't have a lot of ammo to waste.
Herschel, you and Carl, take this tower.
Right.
I'll run for the gate.
Rick's plan succeeds. The group liberates the sprawling prison yard from the undead horde.
Fantastic.
Nice shooting.
You okay? I haven't felt this good in weeks.
Good.
Oh. Oh. We haven't had this much space since we left the farm. Oh.
But that night, Rick thinks they could accomplish even more the next day.
Weapons, food, medicine. This place could be a gold mine.
We're dangerously low on ammo. We run out before we make a dent.
That's why we have to go in there. Hand to hand. After all we've been through, we can handle it, I know it. These assholes don't stand a chance.
So the next day, Rick's squad of handpicked zombie fighters, himself, Daryl, T-Dog, Glenn, and Maggie, they push on into the interior of the prison. They take on more walkers than we've ever seen them do at one time before. Some of the walkers even have riot gear, so a higher degree of difficulty there. But they manage it, and Maggie discovers that while a zombie with a face shield can't bite, it can still get stabbed through the jaw.
See that?
So soon the group claims a whole cell block, but Rick leads another expedition deeper into the prison's catacombs, the dark, confusing catacombs, for more supplies. And Herschel joins this group, but he ends up getting bitten on the leg, which should be a death sentence, but Rick's got other plans for him, and they involve a hatchet.
Only one way to keep you alive.
Everyone okay? All right. So it's a change of the guard for the show, and it's a change for the better, I think. It's where the series makes a point of jettisoning all the extraneous dialogue and fills the space with a lot of action that we'd been missing for a long time. And what's even better is the group stops being victims of fate and becomes heroes that we can root for after most of us have been rooting for the zombies for 2 years. So, for example, Rick's son Carl, complete liability in season two, but now he seems to have stuff together, at least for now. Andrea's still annoying, but she's separated from the group, and she's teamed up with Michonne, who at that point was a new character, and she really knows her way around a katana. Yeah, see what I mean about the less dialogue? So Carol, she hasn't been anything but tragic and pathetic up till now, and she starts getting more interesting, like in the scene where she and Daryl are standing guard on top of an overturned bus.
Better go back.
It's pretty romantic. Screw around.
I'll go down first.
Even better.
Stop.
Even Lori, who the group is well rid of now, she has a great moment when she's worried about her pregnancy and she airs her fears to Herschel.
It's the baby. I think I lost it.
You haven't felt it move?
Nothing. And no Braxton Hicks. At first I thought it was exhaustion or malnutrition.
You're anemic.
If we're all infected, then so's the baby. So what if it's still? What if it's dead inside me right now? What if it rips me apart?
Stop.
No, don't stop. That's awesome.
Well, let's say it lives and I die during childbirth.
That's not going to happen.
Why not? How many women died in childbirth before modern medicine? If I come back, what if I attack it? Or you, or Rick, or Carl? If I do, if there is any chance, you put me down immediately. You don't hesitate. Me, the baby. If we're walkers, you don't hesitate and you don't try to save us. Okay?
Okay.
Yes, okay. Deal. No problem.
Done. There could be an argument made that The Walking Dead's best episode is Clear. That's the one where Rick re-encounters his original savior, Morgan. But I think that episode relies really heavily on the performance of Lenny James as Morgan, whereas Seed works as more of a whole, satisfying, it's even exhilarating in places. And it finally shows the potential of The Walking Dead as a series. Whether the show will ever consistently live up to that potential remains an open question, but it's a question that was raised by Seed. And for that reason, I submit this episode to the canon.
Well argued. You know, when I watched Walking Dead in season one, and I really enjoyed it until the end of season one, where I thought it really kind of shit the bed with the whole center of disease control stuff, and kept with it through the start of season two. Did not make it to the end of season two for all the reasons that you stated at the start of this submission. Really boring, a zombie show with zombies that aren't really around. You know, if I wanted to watch people being mopey and sad, I would go to the recycling center near our Ralph's here. And then you're right. I mean, this season three, they totally turned it around. They realized that they had a show with survivors and people that bite survivors and turn them into zombies, and that could be really great. And why are we dealing with all this, you know,
existentialism?
Yeah, exactly. Let's see swords through eyes. Let's see people's head explode, and why not? And you have all these characters, and, you know, the characters are sort of very niche-y, you know what I mean? Like, they are characters. Oh, what a bunch of characters these people are, right? And yeah. why not use it? I mean, why not just embrace that and have, the craziness and the nihilism and everything pop up in the people that exhibit those traits? And this is definitely the start of that, and I think it is a good pick. I really the one thing I like about this episode, and you're totally right, is that they aren't afraid anymore just to have a sequence that is all action, no dialogue. And what it reminded me of is Enemies at the Gate, the Jude Law, Ron Perlman, Ed Harris sniper movie.
Oh, in Stalingrad?
Yeah. Because, like, everything about that movie is, like, room to room, house to house, brick to brick, sort of planning everything. And the opening scene where they're going through the house sort of reminded me of that, and there's hints of that going through this whole episode. And I love stuff like, I love a piece of action that takes place in a very small environment. That's why Die Hard kind of worked, you know, in at least in relation to much bigger action films, you know, that take place over, you know, whole continents, like a James Bond kind of deal. And this really reminded me of that movie in all the right ways. And actually, like, that movie sort of has a lot in common setting wise with this, you know, like it's just a bombed out city. There's nothing happening. Everybody's almost undead. It really hit my pleasure point. Tara?
Cool.
Yeah, I liked it too. I only started watching Walking Dead. I watched all of season one with Dave, maybe like 75% of the episodes usually, and then I would fall asleep. And then I stopped. But I started again this season because I heard it was good again, and it has been good. But this was a very exciting episode, and it really does feel like a turning point. Even not knowing what's come before it, it was really fun to watch. I had a different reaction to the opening scene with the house as I turned to Dave at the end and said, can the rest of the episode just be like 40 minutes of them just like cleaning it up, just a montage of like organizing everything, because that's my jam. But I'm sure that the rest of the prison scenes for the episodes to come are kind of, you know, different versions of that anyway, which is interesting to me.
What you want is the Walking Dead makeover show.
Exactly. Yeah.
First we start with the homes, exactly, and then we capture ourselves some zombies and we give them beautiful makeovers.
Flip this charnel house.
I can't top that, Sarah.
I was the opposite of excited about this canon submission, I will not lie. I quit The Walking Dead after like three episodes because of the actress who plays Lori. She is a drip.
She's the worst.
Also, what they're infected with is bad Southern accents, and everyone has it. I started to have a bad Southern accent after watching this episode. But I think it made a lot of mistakes in the beginning. First of all, not understanding that if it's a zombie show, you got to have zombies.
Yeah.
Right.
And also not being that you can be both cinematic and like believable and truthful about the day-to-day lives of these people. Like, what would this really be like on an everyday level? Which I thought this episode was good at showing that, but it was also really tense and action-y. It brought up some interesting questions like, well, how do you deal with a zombie in riot gear? And you have like 2 seconds to think of something. Mm-hmm. Lori, I know for a fact, gets killed. So knowing that was going to happen, that she would be gone later, was like satisfying to me. And at the end of it, I was watching it with my arms folded, and then like by the end of the episode, my husband comes through the living room and I'm like sort of leaning forward watching it, and then there's the holy shit moment. And the episode ends and he's like, so we're watching the next one, right? And I was like, I can't believe this, but yeah, why not? Next.
Wow.
So yeah, well done. Like, this is a this is a great hour of television that, especially when, now that I know the context of it, that it really was like having to reboot this series, it was kind of flailing. Mm-hmm. That it's very impressive. It was very tense and exciting, and, you know, Lori still sucks, but whatever.
Yeah.
But bye.
I just wanted to add, I love the part that you picked the clip of Maggie figuring out how to kill the Riot Gear one and then being like, look at that! Because I feel like that's what I would be yeah. like. Everybody praise me!
That worked! Yeah,
grade totally. Me! I'm ever so good!
Exactly. And it also didn't skimp on gross out moments too, which God, is impressive.
Oh,
when
yeah.
they peel off the mask and like half the skin
oh,
comes
yeah.
with it. Oh, it's so disgusting!
So squelchy. Like,
yep.
yeah, yeah.
Even worse only listening to it. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah,
so we're good. Eating dinner while watching it.
Oh, nice!
Yeah,
yeah,
this is great.
The prison scene where all the zombie Riot Gear guys come out was so like a scene directed by somebody who had lived through the video game age rather than just experience.
It's all very video game. Yeah, this episode.
Yeah. I mean, that's,
in a good way.
Oh, in an absolutely good way. But that was sort of like it's not the boss fight, but it's the characters you meet just before the boss comes out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All right. I say we put this to a vote, Tara.
Yay. I don't know what that was. Yay is what I meant to say.
You meant brave. Sarah?
Brain.
The Walking Dead Season 3, Episode 1, The Turning Point. It's called Seed. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and Loser of the Week. And Sarah has our winner.
Better Call Saul. Already mm-hmm. a winner. Already got renewed for season 2.
Yeah.
Yay, Bob Odenkirk.
Mm-hmm.
And have they started filming?
I think they've started filming.
Okay. But we don't have a release date, do we?
I don't believe so.
All right, good for them. That's pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. I am really looking forward to that. It's like, it's one of those like, you're like, oh, don't screw it up.
Yeah.
Don't screw it up. Yeah, yeah. Because like, I really am super happy for Bob Odenkirk that like there's this, you know, resurgence. Because like he was so good in Mr. Show, and I always thought he was like everybody's second favorite while it was on.
Mm-hmm.
And then like after you watch it, like, oh, okay, like he's the person
he's
that's
the real
making
deal.
Yeah,
he's the
real
engine.
Deal. Totally.
Yes, totally.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And as we said before, pop culture's greatest yeller.
Definitely.
Loser of the week?
Loser of the week is Dr. Mehmet Oz, who had to go in front of Congress last week and admit he's been endorsing a shitload of different snake oil products. Oops. As if that wasn't shameful enough, then he was the topic of the final segment on Last Week Tonight,
yep.
Where they not only got to juxtapose what he actually said in his testimony, but they were able to come up with clips of that basically disproved what he was saying and had clips from his daily syndicated show where he uses terms like magic and miracle drug and scientists say and all that yeah. other kind of stuff. So if you've wondered why there's all those ads on your Facebook for Dr. Mehmet Oz promoting this or that weight loss cure, it's because there is some relationship to shit he's actually said on the show. And just as a sidebar, if you haven't read the profile of him in The New Yorker from last year, you should, because it's incredibly damning and mean and awesome. So check that out.
Very good, Tara. Thank you. That brings up an interesting question, which is this. Do you know what time it is?
Acai berry time?
Brains time?
It's game time.
Nothing.
Antioxidants are what you should be taking.
I love it when Dave sings at game time.
Nice. All right, everybody. This is the fourth game time of this season.
Mm-hmm.
The standings are currently...
Yep.
Sarah with nothing, looking to get on the board.
Yep.
Tara with one.
Right.
And value guest with two.
Good job, Jeff.
Woo!
Yeah. Way to go,
good
Jeff.
Glad someone pulled it out.
Today's game time comes from none other than professional game maker and player Trip Payne.
Ooh.
From tripleplaypuzzles.com.
Past and future guest of the show.
Absolutely. And a Survivor correspondent.
Indeed.
On the site.
Yes.
For his trouble, Trip earns himself an extra credit. redeemable for an extra hot, great topic of his choosing, which he's already given to me.
Nice.
So look forward to that, I think, in 2 weeks. 2 weeks.
All right.
He's a pro.
Yeah.
Man.
I will let Tripp explain the rules to the game game. Over the years, there have been many board games based on TV shows.
Oh, no.
I will give you the year that a game came out.
Uh-huh.
Which is always in a year that was within the original run of the show.
Okay.
And a quote from the rules of the game. If you can then name the show the game is based on, you earn 2 points.
Okay.
You don't need to know the name of the game, just okay. The show the game is based on.
Right.
If you need a hint, it will be in the form of a second quote from the rules of the game, after which the correct answer is worth a single point.
Okay.
Are we all clear on that?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Clear. Let's throw it to Picky to see who's going to go first.
We will start with Sarah.
All right, so let's go Sarah, and then let's see. Nobody's in the same city, so.
We will start with valued guest.
All right, so Sarah, and then on to Jeff in Minnesota, and then back to LA with Tara.
I love that you keep saying Minnesota like he's everywhere. He's in Minneapolis, Dave.
Well, I didn't want to say, because now all, you know, all the fans are going to...
That's true. Model. They'll just converge.
Yeah. All right. So we have 36 questions. So you're all getting 12 apiece.
Okay.
Are we ready to play the game game, he says?
Yes.
Very slowly, because he realizes he doesn't have the document right in front of his eyeballs, and he's going to say a few. And then, all right, let's play.
Nice vamping, Dave.
Yeah. We are ready to play the game game.
Are you ready for us to play the game game, Dave?
I am.
All right.
All right. And here's the other twist. We're going to go in chronological order.
Ooh.
So we're going to start with the way, way back stuff, and we're going to work up towards the present day.
Got it.
All right?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Sarah.
Yes.
1965. You're off to capture a chief as quickly as possible and return to headquarters to ward off disaster. Is a clue. That's from the rules of this board game. Tell me the show.
You're off to capture a chief
as quickly as possible and return to headquarters to ward off disaster. You can answer it now for 2 points. You can ask for an additional hint.
I would like an additional hint, please.
Enemy thrush agents are everywhere and watching your every move.
Get smart.
Close. That is the man from Uncle.
Ah.
The man from Uncle. All right, so now we're going to go on
Sally
to Jeff.
Sally Draper Jerkoff Show, The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Oh, gross. Oh,
is that what she was?
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Oh, sorry, I guess.
Okay.
Forgiveness, please.
Nope. Right.
Jeff, 1966, yes. 1 year later. Place a villain or super crime lab tile in each of the 36 blank squares in the center of the board.
I think I know one other clue.
All right. Pedestrian player pieces remain in corner spaces while players are operating Batmobiles.
All right. I am going to go out on a limb then, and I'm going to say this is for Batman.
Good for 1 point. That is the Batman game. And the one before it, just to, is the Man from U.N.C.L.E. game. They were really, really good with naming their games back then. Tara, also from 1966. Mm-hmm. You use colors for passwords in order to move around the camp and collect this necessary equipment. Use colors for passwords in order to move around the camp and collect this necessary equipment.
Hint.
When you have collected a money card, a passport card, and a map card for your man, you will learn when there is a sentry off duty. Sneak your man out under that unguarded fence position first and win!
Hogan's Heroes?
Yeah. Oh. The Hogan Heroes
nice
game.
Thanks, second clue.
Hogan's Heroes, the bluff-out game. All right, so we're back to Sarah.
Yep.
Moving ahead to 1971. The first player to reach the bus by exact count wins the game.
Partridge Family.
Nice.
2 points.
Wow.
That is the Partridge Family game.
Well done.
1973, Jeff.
Ready.
A player landing on the trap door falls into the torture room and must follow the path to get back up the stairs again.
Well, it's not American Horror Story.
No,
nope. Probably not.
Probably not Scooby-Doo. Can I get a second clue, please?
Players wander through the haunted castle searching for the hidden treasure. Torture and treasure are involved with this board game.
Okay, was there Dark Shadows?
Oh, good guess. Oh. But you're going to really be mad with yourself.
Is it Scooby-Doo?
It's Scooby-Doo.
Oh. Damn it. Outsmarted
myself. I want there to be a Dark Shadows game, though. I want to play that now.
It takes like 7 years to finish a game. 1973, Tara.
Yep.
The old field where the gang played baseball, the houses and the streets are all the places you will travel. 1973.
Hint?
The game from the TV cartoon is set in Bill's old neighborhood.
Bill? No idea.
Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids.
Of course.
Yep. All right, 1975, Sarah. Mm-hmm. Object to be the first one back to Mr. Hooper's store.
Would this be Sesame Street?
Good for 2 points. That is from the board game Walk Along Sesame Street. Mm-hmm. 1976, Jeff. Drag race. The loser must go to the Hey Nerd space of the winner's choice.
Wow.
Is that Welcome Back, Cotter?
What?
Here's the other clue. The first player to collect 16 cool points.
Oh, happy days?
Happy days. And move into the winner's space on the jukebox. Wins the game.
Totally would have guessed Cotter myself.
But wait. Ready for the full name of the game? Happy Days, Fonzie's Real Cool Game.
Oh, God.
That sounds cool.
That is the epitome of cool, guys. 1976. Mm-hmm. The four special cards, and in brackets, fly to any airport and Steve Austin assists, may be saved and used as needed.
Is it the $6 million man?
To use Jamie's powers, roll both dice.
Damn it.
The Bionic Woman game.
Damn.
You got khaki.
I did.
Cold.
That is cold.
1977, Sarah.
Yep.
It will help you to, and for some reason this is in quotes, know the street names so that you can take the fastest route to your assignment.
It'll help you to, quote, know the street names.
I don't know if that is a salient clue. I don't
think it is. It isn't. It's just people being bad at punctuation. Could
quotes.
I have a hint, please?
Yes. The first player with both bikes completing three missions wins the game.
Both bikes?
Both bikes.
Oh, I have a theory.
Oh, crap.
I do, too.
Yeah.
Chips?
Pardon me?
Chips?
That was my.
Good
that
for
was my guess.
1 point, yes. I thought you said ships, in which case I was like, that's not ships.
No.
That's not a show. Come on, Dave. Use your ears. All right, Jeff.
Hit me.
1978. Want to be a starship captain or a fashion model? Maybe a millionaire?
What the hell?
Well, do you?
Yeah, do you, Jeff? Which one? Wait, hang on a sec, guys. Jeff. Starship captain, fashion model, millionaire. Which one do you want to be?
Fashion model in 1978?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Other people on the board, please think about your answer. It's important.
All right, I think I need the second clue.
Wait, I want an answer.
What?
Do you want to be a starship captain, a fashion model, or a millionaire? Hypothetically, which one would you be?
Oh, this is an actual question. Oh, then let's go with starship captain.
It's banter.
Good choice.
All right.
Now give him his second clue.
Because as a starship captain, you could probably make more than $1 million. And you force yourself into the fashion industry. Here's your second clue, Jeff. The inner paths are Love and Kisses Lagoon, the Money Tree Grove, Adventure Valley, and Fortune Beach. Those are the inner paths.
Wow.
Love and Kisses Lagoon.
Gross.
Yeah, that's full of STDs. The Money Tree Grove. Where the Oak Ticket lives. There's Oak Ticket adjacent.
No, Ticket Oak.
Adventure Valley and Fortune Beach. What's the show that board game is from? Jeff, any idea? Did we lose Jeff?
Jeff?
No.
Sorry.
No, he's still here. Oh, okay. Jeff, what's your answer?
Sorry, I was on mute. I have no answer, sorry. I have no idea.
Any guesses?
Fantasy Island,
yeah. That is the Fantasy Island game.
The Fantasy Island game.
All right, here's our last question before the first score break.
Mm-hmm.
Tara, 1978 again.
Right.
Whenever you land on good harvest or strong horses, you earn one free spin of a number.
What was the year again? 78?
78.
Is it Little House on the Prairie?
It is. Good for 2 points. Now, the scorers.
Jeff has 1 point. I have 3 points. Sarah has 5 points.
Ooh, all right. Very good. So we're back to Sarah for this 1979 board game clue. Assemble the Splink Blinker and place it along with the two Orson cards by the side of the board, then place the Gleek card onto the Gleek space on the board.
What? Okay, you know, I'm just going to guess because it's right or it's wrong. Mork and Mindy.
Nice!
2 points, yep. Second clue involved the word Shazbot.
Shazbot.
Didn't we have that game?
The Mork and Mindy game?
Didn't somebody buy it? Remember the card game that had all like the weird creatures? It must be a different game. Don't you remember that?
Maybe.
It's in the cupboard somewhere. Anyways. 1980, Jeff. 1980.
Yep.
Players score a port bonus by collecting 3 or more port cards from the same international zone.
Ew.
1980.
That's what she said.
I'm going to say port bonus. I'm going to say the Love Boat.
Nice.
2 points. The Love Boat World Cruise Game. Ooh. Cruise game. Yeah. Uh-huh. All right. So this is for Tara.
Yep.
1981.
Okay.
The winner is the first person to land on or pass the finish line first. YAAHOO double exclamation point.
Can you read that again? Minus the end. I got the last word.
The winner is the first player to land on or pass the finish line first.
Okay. Second hint.
Double exclamation point. Deciding which road to take each time your turn comes up is an important part of racing to Uncle Jesse's farm.
Oh. The Dukes of Hazzard?
From the Dukes of Hazzard game, you are correct. All right. Sarah.
Yes.
1983. If an opponent's car is blocking your path at any point, you have a choice to take a different route or to challenge that driver to a game of chicken. The chicken challenge is explained later.
Sadly, I think I own and have played this game.
Uh-huh.
It is incredibly boring.
Uh-huh.
Susan Tankersley will back me up. Mm-hmm. Knight Rider.
Yes.
Hey.
Oh, that was
nice
serendipity
one.
That you got that question.
Mm-hmm.
Number 17.
It's pretty cool.
From 1984, mm-hmm. for Jeff. Object. Okay. To make your way into the vault of a heavily guarded fortress, capture the secret formula, and make your way out again.
Hmm. Second clue, please.
BA knows where it's at, and so he'll be there to help you in your mission.
The A-Team.
Yeah, it is. But this is the best. The name of the game is... By the way, I'm only mentioning it when the name of the game isn't just the name of the show.
Yes.
The A-Team. The A-Team.
Oh, no.
This better be good.
Get it out.
The A-Team, B-A, lends a hand in the race for the formula.
What a weird name. Lends a hand.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
All right. Moving on.
Yeah. Sorry.
I have to play that now.
Oh my god. All right. 1985 for Tara.
You forgot to play the 19. Yeah.
This is 1985.
Oh, all right.
This is question 18.
Okay, sorry.
Hillary starts her turn at the police station. She rolls 4 and moves to the Pine Valley Hospital. There she plays Shoot Adam in the Back.
What?
Let me read that one again. Hillary starts her turn at the police station. She rolls 4 and moves to the Pine Valley Hospital. There she plays, quote, Shoot Adam in the Back.
Is it All My Children?
Ah. Nice. Oh,
wow.
Bye, Dave.
Good for kids. All right.
I used to be really good at Shoot Adam in the Back.
All right, Sarah, 1985. If you are a Jessica player, wait near the board and do nothing. Do not peek at the dead alive tokens or touch anything. If you are Jessica player, wait near the board and do nothing. Do not peek at the dead alive tokens or touch anything.
This is actually my strategy in every game time. Murder, She Wrote?
Guess what? 2 points. Nice. 2 points. Yes, that's from Murder, She Wrote. The board game. All right, Jeff.
Yep.
1992, zipping ahead 7 years.
Wow.
Don't forget to punch out the free turn chips and place them on the board on their spot. Next to Melville's.
Cheers?
2 points.
Correct. Wow. All right.
What do you do in the Cheers game?
Drink. And it ain't no game.
All right. Bringing us into our second score break. Mm-hmm. 1993, Tara.
Okay.
Take the taxi to the mall or the cable car to the park. You must roll exact numbers. Take the taxi to the mall.
Yep.
Or the cable car to the park. There's some good clues there.
I'm gonna gamble.
Yep.
Is it Full House?
Hey! Full House,
wow,
the board game.
Nice.
Correct.
All right. The scores have changed dramatically. Jeff has 6 points. Ooh. I have 8 points. Sarah has 11 points.
All right.
Wow.
So that was question number 21. So there's still a bit of game to be played. Here we go, number 22, for Sarah, from 1998. Answer trivia questions, test your luck on the chance cards, and try to set the fastest possible lap time.
Lap time?
That's correct.
I need another hint, please.
The race marshal turns on the Stig module and deals out 8,000 pounds to each player.
8,000 pounds.
The race marshal turns on the Stig module and deals out 8,000 pounds to each player.
No idea.
Tara.
Top Gear?
Top Gear, race the Stig game. Race the Stig. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. All right, Jeff. 1999. By using the insults and various other clues provided by other players, the first to figure out exactly who the bleep they are will be the winner. Bleep is part of the rules. That is not me bleeping something out. That is written in the rules as bleep.
Okay, this is 1999, you said?
Yep.
All right. Can I have the second clue, please?
When landing on a space that instructs you to give them a piece of your mind or to tell them exactly what you think of them, you must tell off another player using at least one aspect depicted on that player's guest card.
Wow, this sounds like Watch What Happens Live or Survivor, but this is before all that.
This is a tricky one.
It is tricky, and yeah. I've got nothing.
Any guesses?
The Real World?
No, I'll give you this hint. It's not a scripted show.
Okay.
The Jerry Springer Show, The Game.
Wow.
Well, that makes sense.
I feel better about missing that now.
Yeah, that was really tough one. All right, 2000. Yep. We're now in the 2000s, Tara.
Okay.
With 2000.
Yep.
Items are map to the water well, rice, matches, first aid kit, swimming gears, tools, and treasure chest. Blah, blah, blah. Treasure chest.
Is this Survivor?
Correct for 2 points. It is Survivor. All right. That was a pretty easy one. Pretty easy one, Tar. Don't get too cocky.
Okay.
Sarah. Okay. I'm sorry.
Seems unnecessary, but fine.
Yeah. Well. Sarah.
Yes.
2004. Dive into the, in quotes, dumpsters when you land on a, in quotes, 27th precinct tile. Dive into the dumpsters when you land on a 27th precinct tile.
Dive into the dumpsters?
Uh-huh. 2004.
I will need another hint, please.
Have another player pick up your corresponding Scales of Justice card and read it, then compare it to your evidence.
CSI.
Law and Order.
Oh, no.
Chung Chung.
Wow. It took them that long, huh?
Yeah.
Wow, that is surprising.
Yeah. All right.
2004, Jeff. Another 2004.
Okay.
Place the 8 Vipers and 4 Raptors in the Viper and Raptor reserve space of the game board.
Battlestar Galactica.
Correct. Battlestar Galactica, the board game. 2006. Tara. Mm-hmm. Agents should work independently to determine the value of the information provided. But beware, there is a mole card in the deck.
24?
24 colon the DVD board game.
Oh.
Technology is increasing. We now have video to go with your board games.
Ooh.
All right, Sarah. 2006. 24. 2006, Sarah.
Yes.
Injured characters do still draw fate cards when instructed and can run into encounters and probably die.
Can you read it again?
Yes. Injured characters do still draw fate cards when instructed and can run into encounters, and in brackets, and probably die.
And probably die. Could I have the second hint, please?
Fate cards represent the many physical and mental challenges of the island.
Lost.
Lost, colon, the game. Boy, that sounds fun.
Seriously.
Fate encounter.
You'll probably die.
You'll probably still die. Why bother even
playing? Bye, Hasbro.
Yeah. That's not necessarily the end of the game for you, even if you do.
The home edition comes with a gun. Okay. Jesus. 96 plus 10 years is 2006, which is the year of this board game. Jeff?
I'm ready.
When you've reached your final city, the DVDs automatically send you to the finish line bonus round.
The Amazing Race.
The Amazing Race DVD board game.
Well done. They're taking
over. All right. Tara, taking us to our final score break.
Yes.
Before the end.
Okay.
2010.
Mm-hmm.
Now decide which of the six agents to send to that area. For example, players might choose to start at the crime scene. And Dinozio should be sent there. D-I-N-O-Z-Z, or for our Americans, Z-Z-O should be sent there.
Dinozo.
Dinozo. Dinozo. Who knows? Dinozos.
Dexter? Shit.
Jeff seems to know.
NCIS.
NCIS the game. Oh, correct.
Navally.
You should have answered that one. Navally, Tara.
I know. Well, this is extremely exciting. Jeff has 10 points. Sarah and I are tied.
Four.
With 12 points each.
Dun, dun, dun.
Y'all have two questions left.
So it is anybody's game.
It is anybody's game. So here we go. Are you ready, Sarah?
Yes.
2010 again. Put the double-sided Elena card to the side within easy reach. 2010. Put the double-sided Elena card to the side within easy reach.
I'm going to need the second clue, please.
When Damon or Stefan
wears
the ring, they can go out in the sun. Oh, good for them.
This actually sounds like a pretty interesting game. Vampire Diaries.
Nice.
Vampire Diaries card game. Card game. Yep. Mm. Good for 1 point. All right. Jeff.
Yep.
2010. Shuffle the time continuum question cards into one pile and place them to one side of the board.
No.
No, I will not be doing that. I need to narrow it down. Can I have the second clue, please?
There are three kinds of enemies. Daleks, Ceruleans, and Weeping Angels.
I'm going to go with Doctor Who then.
Doctor Who, the Time Wars family board game.
Oh. No nudity in that
Time
one.
Time Wars After Dark version.
Yes. That's where the Daleks and the Weeping Angels.
Gets a little blue.
Oh.
Ew.
Sorry.
2010, Dave. Tara.
Yeah?
2010. What? All right.
2010.
2010, lost my place. Here we go. You can redeem a completed blood spatter report if you land on any Miami Metro Police board space.
Is this Jesus. Dexter?
It is Dexter, the board game. All right, last question, Sarah. 2011. After all, gas and bullets aren't being protected near Atlanta or anywhere else for that matter. After all, gas and bullets aren't being produced. That would make more sense. After all, gas and bullets aren't being produced near Atlanta or anywhere else for that matter.
All right, Atlanta, don't screw me. Walking Dead?
Two nice. Points. Okay.
Nicely done.
2011 for Jeff.
Ready?
When a player loot... Oh, my God. God, I'm losing my mind. When a player uses the Valyrian steel blade, he flips the token over to its faded side, indicated it has been used this game round.
Game of Thrones?
Game of Thrones is correct. Game of Thrones the board game, second edition.
Oh, God.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh. Okay.
All right.
Last question for Tara.
Yep.
2012.
Mm-hmm.
The referee flips over a red card and reads it aloud. If it has a green background and says experimental formula on that, the referee indicates that as well.
Hint?
Shuffle all of the blue cards together, Tara.
Yeah.
Including the four special Bazanga cards.
Oh.
Bazinga?
Bazanga? Bazinga. It's the Big Bang Theory.
Good for 1 point.
Well, I hope you have a tiebreaker.
All right. What's the scores?
Jeff has 13. Sarah and I are tied 15 all.
15 all. I, in fact, do have a tiebreaker.
Okay.
Now let me just read it to myself.
Okay.
Okay, so this is how it's going to work.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you the clue very slowly. You can answer at any time. But once you answer, you cannot answer again until the other person's had a try, right?
Yep.
This is how we usually do it. Are we ready? Sarah? Ready? Sarah?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. Tara? Ready?
Yes.
Here we go. 2013. Starting in the servants' hall, each player is dealt destination cards which have varying values indicated by the number of bells on the card.
Downton Abbey.
Sarah got
it. Sarah. Congratulations, Sarah. She takes it. As a maid or footman, you have to complete the task you are given as quickly and efficiently as possible. Good advice for
the show.
Oh, burn. Burn.
Congratulations, Sarah.
Well done.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We took care of the Fargo TV show right here in Brainerd while our other selves chatted about season 2 of Orphan Black before going around the dial with stops at The Haunting of, Enlisted, Dominion, Big Brother, and a little bit of Doctor Who. Jeff successfully pitched us The Walking Dead's third season opener, Seed, for the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Sarah was the winner of this week's Game Time. Remember, guys.
Yeah.
We're listening.
No, you listen. Amber Alert is not an option if I say you're making a car bomb. You bloody well make a car bomb.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Arianna...
Leave it out.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Mrs. S. for President.
Jeff Alexander.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Sydney the Clown!